Hello and welcome to another episode of BTS by the Book, a podcast that explores BTS, probably our favorite group, through books about them, one chapter at a time. I'm your host. I call myself the BTS Bookworm. I do that because I am not only a university librarian whose life is surrounded by books, but when it comes to my particular fandom and appreciation of BTS, it was grounded about 90%, not in the music or the choreo or things like that, videos from BTS, but it was grounded in books about BTS. That's how I became such a big fan of BTS, and books have continued to help that appreciation grow. And I'm just sharing that with people who I think are a little bit like me, who not only appreciate the group, but who want to learn more about them through books, not just what they find online and in the web and videos and things like that. So thank you again for joining me. This episode was introduced by a few seconds from the song I'm sure you're familiar with, and that is Idol. And that song has a direct tie-in to the chapter of the day. We're starting our episode with that song. Well, the chapter length portion we're considering today also begins with the lyrics from Idol. I say chapter length because on occasion, I try to make it rare, on occasion I choose to consider multiple chapters from a book that has shorter than average chapters, and so that by combining two chapters, I feel like we have enough to work with for an episode. And I try to pick two chapters that are side by side, that have a lot to do with each other, that build on each other, instead of picking chapter 3 or chapter 11 from a book. It's more like 3 and 4. And that is what we're doing today. We are looking at two chapters back to back, chapters 5 and 6. From the book called The Unofficial BTS Bible. And I don't know that this is a subtitle, but on the cover of the book, there's the front and center statement, "All of the facts you need on K-pop's biggest sensations." Sensations, plural. And this is a book written by Diane Pineda Kim. She is an online editor and writer based in South Korea. She's the author of K-pop Style from 2018. She has a background in print magazine editing and lives in Korea. According to this bio on the book, this title was from 2020, so it's fairly recent. Racehorse is the name of the publisher. It is 192 pages long. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know that 100 pages is my bare minimum page count for considering a book to be substantive enough for us to look at. So this one's close to 200 pages, so it definitely meets that criteria. It has plenty of pictures in it, and yet, I say pictures, I mean photos. Sorry. But plenty of content as well. But as I've already mentioned, the chapters tend to be fairly brief, but I think compared to some other books with shorter chapters, I think this one has a nice balance. None of the chapters, in my opinion, are too short. I haven't read one yet where I feel like this was way too short. I really want more info, and I'm sorry that it wasn't here. I feel like the chapters are nicely balanced. And I understand why an author would opt for shorter chapters than longer chapters, because the average reader today, you know, with our ever-shrinking attention spans, we're not going to hang on for a chapter that's 15 pages when it really ought to be 8 or 9 pages. And so I understand that. There's no introduction or preface in this book. Normally, I try to provide some background for a chapter, some intro, some context, so you understand what this author was trying to accomplish with his or her book. Well, I can't do that because there's no such thing with the unofficial BTS Bible. We are considering chapters 5 and 6. Chapter 5 is called K-Pop Calls for Change. And chapter 6 is entitled Stepping Outside the Norm, The Rise of the Rogue Producer. And I picked these two chapters because they go perfectly hand in hand. They could have been one chapter, but the author broke it into two. And I love the focus of each. And as always, I want to do my best to think about two things throughout. And I often mix them up and consider them side by side and not save one for the end. But I want to consider both overview, describing what the chapter includes. And I want to do so without overly quoting from the book, because in the end, I want you to go out and get your own copy of this book. And I do recommend this book, by the way. And so some overview with some review. I want to share my thoughts about the book. As a BTS fan, do I feel, for example, like this book is sharing some meaningful info about what makes this group so special? What makes them unique? I believe we're fans of BTS because we believe they're unique and they're special. Does this author reflect that in their writing? And if so, how? Let's get specific. And so I'll try to do that as we work through these two chapters. And again, I'm considering two, not just one, because I think when you combine these two chapters, you get what I would consider a fully fleshed out one chapter length. So this chapter 5 begins on page 35 and runs through 38. That's about 4 pages. The chapter, this is the K-Pop Calls for Change chapter. There's a full page photo spread at the very beginning of the chapter, which I consider kind of part of the chapter, so maybe it's closer to 5 pages. As I mentioned, this chapter begins with some lyrics from Idol. And the lyrics set the stage for what's going on in this chapter. You know, because the lyrics of the song hint at being a different kind of idol than you might be accustomed to. So what is that normal idol image consist of? Well, I believe that's what a lot of chapter 5 is all about. And the chapter begins, after the lyrics, of course, with a series of questions that I believe the chapter is trying to address, but then subsequent chapters, later chapters, maybe it's only a few, but they're also trying to address. So here are the questions. I love these questions. Question 1. How did BTS reach the top? Who are the members of BTS, and what is it about them that captivated the world? Isn't that a good question? And the third question, how did they go from aspiring idols to inspiring leaders of K-pop music, and perhaps beyond? So it's those three questions that the author is going to be considering starting in this chapter, but continuing in later chapters as well, including the one we're about to look at. So This chapter is all about K-pop and K-pop as it existed years before BTS was ever even considered in anyone's mind. In order to understand, in my opinion, and this is where I think the author's coming from, you can't understand what BTS is like and what they're not like unless you understand K-pop. Because obviously BTS is still, they still have some qualities that are exhibited in the average K-pop and group and K-pop groups before BTS. But they're also different too. And you can't understand really how different they are, maybe why they're different, of course, unless you get that K-pop, that traditional K-pop backdrop. Which I like that phrase, by the way, K-pop backdrop. Anyway, should be a song about that, maybe. And the start of the talk about K-pop begins not just with pop, but with other Korean types of popular fare, F-A-R-E. Not just the music, but other things too, like Korean drama and movies. So I want to share some of that here on from page 35. There is talk about what distinguishing characteristics there have been since K-pop's beginning, and there are five mentioned in one paragraph here. I think these are succinct but say a lot. One, the psychedelic music videos. Two, colorful costumes. Three, catchy tunes. Isn't that the truth? Four, synchronized dance. And five, a wholesome image of the stars. And those things, obviously we see a lot of them in BTS, but the question still coming up is how different are they too? And how far do they venture from that? So there's talk in the next paragraph about the Korean wave known as, I never feel like I'm pronouncing this right, but it's spelled capital H-A-L-L-Y-U, Hallyu, is how I tend to pronounce it, the Korean wave, which is much bigger than music, but it has to do with Korean culture spilling out way past the borders of Korea into not just Asia even, but around the world, including the U.S., obviously, in the West. There's some talk here about Korean tourism and surveying people who, and this goes back to 2016 and 17, so BTS had been a thing for a few years, but hadn't been a global phenomenon by then, not nearly compared to the way they are now in 2021, but some surveys conducted back then of people who traveled to Korea from places like China, Japan, United States, Taiwan, Thailand, Singapore. Over 50% of those people claimed that it was from watching TV, Korean dramas and films. That is the part of the wave that seemed to influence a lot of those travelers back then. And obviously there was some music that influenced that too. And I think the point the author is trying to make is the Hallyu wave had already started, make no mistake, before BTS came on the scene. And obviously BTS has ridden that wave like nobody else and has increased the wave. I mean, what would the wave even be like today if it hadn't been for BTS? So it's probably twice, three times as big, but they've also ridden that wave that was there before they came along. So where would they be today without that wave having existed before them, without those other non-music related aspects of the wave, the dramas, the TV related or the films. Well, we don't know, but I appreciate the author bringing it up. So there's some talk on the next page, more talk about the music portion of Korean culture. This is where we get into the nitty-gritty of what K-pop is like. There's mention of, you know, the author wants to make sure that we all know that BTS wasn't the first K-pop music group to break into kind of worldwide fame, including places like the U.S. There's an author, I guess it's better to call him a solo artist named Rain, capital R-A-I-N, a Korean solo singer who, according to the author, cracked the U.S. market in 2006, performing two shows at the historic Madison Square Garden in New York, also starred in at least two Hollywood produced films, Speed Racer and Ninja Assassin. In 2011, the author says he was voted as the most influential person of the year by Time Magazine. And so the author is trying to communicate that Rain was one of those big trailblazers in K-pop who, lest anyone thinks that, you know, BTS was the trailblazer, they were not. People like Rain. Now, Psy, P-S-Y, is not mentioned here. And I think that's cool, too, because even Psy is someone who relied on some trailblazing that happened before him, including people like Rain, which is cool. Psy isn't even mentioned in this chapter, by the way. But these are people, and some other groups are mentioned, like Wonder Girls and Girls' Generation, groups that opened the doors for another generation of K-pop stars. There's talk about how a lot of the work done by groups like the individuals or groups was catered to, at least in the West, like U.S., to immigrants, you know, former Korean residents who had immigrated to the U.S., and I guess kind of second generations or thirds, of course, too, who still had those strong Korean ties, and how a lot of this early wave catered seemingly to those people. But obviously that exploded to include so many more later. 8 years later, after 2011, with Rain's Time Magazine, that's MIP, Most Influential Person of the Year, MIPY, BTS would make the list of most influential people of 2019, claiming the top spot in the magazine's Next Generation Leaders list, which is really cool. So I love how the author makes that connection. So in the next chapters, we get more talk about the K-pop system. There's a lot of talk here, so much I want to read, and so many quotes. I'll try to keep it very short, as short as possible. There's talk about the K-pop industry, starting with what the author calls entertainment agencies. That's a key term here in the business world. They're agencies. And there are two components of this. The author highlights a system and a machinery that results in, or that involves, and quote, idol trainee culture. The author says where boys and girls as young as 10 years old audition to enter intense studio training in music, dance, acting, hosting, and many other valuable entertainment skills. Continuing the quote, this means that by the time that they become K-pop idols, they would have worked really hard for so many years. Again, the umbrella for all of this is the system and the machinery that are already that have been in place for many years, that all managed and micromanaged by entertainment agencies, and some will be mentioned here momentarily by the author. There's about, a paragraph and a half. Well, there are multiple paragraphs that deal with two underlying cultural and philosophical influences in Korea that have been there for a long, long time, many generations probably, that provided a fertile ground for K-pop to flourish in its very beginning. And the two things the author mentions are Confucianism, that's capital C, Confucianism, and traditional hierarchy and views about that in Korean society. So two things treated back-to-back here by the author. One full paragraph is devoted to Confucianism and what kind of cultural influences that particular religious worldview provided for the flourishing of K-pop. I'll let the author speak to this with a quote. "This Confucian belief system, tradition, and religion is difficult to extract from the K-pop ecosystem, which subscribes to its core teachings of," here's a quote in the quote, "the rectification of the mind and self-cultivation." So there's not a lot of info here, just enough to kind of get you thinking about how much that might actually play a role in K-pop success. Don't think about that much. I haven't heard other authors talk about this much, so I thought that was cool. But that's about all I know about it. I haven't looked into it further. So that's one of two factors underlying. There's the hierarchical system, very traditional in Korean culture, that also plays a major part, especially when it comes to the entertainment or the K-pop industries, agencies, I should say, the agencies. The author says things like the home for the K-pop idols, and their siblings, who are their fellow group members, being considered in a very traditional way. The CEO of the agency would assume the role of a father or mother figure, which, you know, could that happen in, say, a U.S. market or another non-Korean market where those traditional hierarchies are not honored by most? I don't think so. I think the author is saying that because those are those traditional hierarchies are in place and have been for so long, centuries, it kind of creates an easy culture an easy foundation to build a K-pop industry on top of. So it's real easy for idols to view the CEO as a father figure and to honor them as such, to treat them as such, and to kind of do what they say, because they've grown up with this traditional hierarchy their entire lives. So the big three, quote, big three agencies in Korea are mentioned here in this context: SM, YG, and JYP. And according to the author, the head of the family, like these groups, is treated with the utmost respect, and his or her, whoever's in charge, their word is law. Okay, and then the next, with that as a backdrop, we have a full paragraph pertaining to what's called slave contracts in this K-pop system, this traditional K-pop system. And so there's talk about what that might involve, with kids signing on with their parents, you know, support or consent to these very rigorous type contracts and unrealistic type contracts, in the sense that most of the trainees do not make it past the trainee phase, but there's nothing they could do about it because of these contracts, so certainly no guarantee of success or financial reward, for sure. Everything is controlled, according to the author. Things like the style of the idol's dress, their image, personality, even their private lives. And which the author says that's why they're called idols, you know, because they're from the perspective of the heads of these agencies, they're being asked or required to embody what the nation, like Korea, considers ideal. So it's a nice definition for idol. And then we have some talk about company rules that are fairly pervasive in the industry, like how to behave, how to date, or if you are allowed to date, or even having close relationships with members of the opposite sex, because the public might misinterpret that. So a lot of that is strongly regulated. And then we have two full paragraphs, which are what I would consider anecdotes or examples of this from the first-hand perspective of two former idols. The first one, I'm not familiar with at all, a crayon pop girl group member whose name is not shared here. But this person, she talks about things like, this is, I guess, from an interview, and I don't see from where, what source, but most of this is a quote. There's talk about strict diets, the practices that would go on until midnight or after midnight, but then you're up by 4 a.m. the next day. Dating is taboo, she describes. Relationships were kept such in check to such an extent that she couldn't, or they, or maybe referring to fellow group members, couldn't even meet their families. There is a footnote here, and I don't have that in front of me right this minute. But like I said, it is a quote from a resource. The next former K-pop idol is a guy this time, Prince Mack, M-A-K, and he... His content is from a YouTube video he shot, where he talks about the very long work days, 18 hours, for example, barely earning $2, if you're lucky, in that period of time. He goes on to say, from his experience, you can be famous and not make any money at the same time. From, again, another former K-pop idol. There's talk in the next paragraph about what idols can and cannot share publicly. And this would involve views on politics, social issues, injustice, sexuality, mental health, and other sensitive topics. Things like that are highly guarded and vetted. And that's very traditional. And I love how that particular paragraph provides such a nice backdrop for BTS and how different they are with that particular angle in consideration. And the author does a great job in this chapter not doing too much with BTS. She doesn't go back and forth, K-pop, BTS, K-pop, BTS. She's just focusing on K-pop. And yet it's hard not to think about how different BTS is along the way. So I love it when authors, after they have just exposed some of the warts and some of the negatives pertaining to K-pop. I love when authors like this one say, okay, let's keep all this in perspective. So there are three concluding paragraphs to this chapter in which the author says, hey, before we get too judgmental and critical of just this one particular industry in this one particular country, Korea, let's remember that this is not unique to Korea. She mentioned some even U.S. Children types of pop efforts like the Mickey Mouse Club that have some shades of this, you know, what could be considered unfair treatment of an unreasonable treatment of children. Before we start pointing fingers, I think the author is trying to say, let's think about how this goes on in other cultures too. It's not just Korea. Maybe not to the extreme. I don't think she's saying that, but she's just saying this isn't utterly unique to Korea. And I appreciate that perspective. I really do. And the last paragraph of the chapter kind of sets the stage for what's coming in the next chapter. We have all these people, especially stars in the industry at this point, you know, just around the time BTS is born, who are their frustration with the industry is starting to grow, and fans of K-pop are wanting something different. And one thing that's mentioned here is authenticity. They're wanting their entertainers and artists to be more real and to become more inspiring because of that. And so this is setting the stage. So everything is ripe for a group like BTS. But again, I think this chapter does a great job explaining how you can't understand BTS truly without understanding the world out of which they came. Because when compared to traditional K-pop, BTS is obviously like them in some respects, but then not like them in other respects. So let's talk about the not like part that comes in chapter 6. This chapter starts on page 42 and ends on page, let's see, hang on a second, 44. So it's not as long of a chapter, about three full pages here. The chapter's called Stepping Outside the Norm, subtitled The Rise of the Rogue Producer. So obviously a lot of the focus is going to be on Bang Sai-hyuk. Sorry for the pronunciation. I heard a pronunciation recently online, and for some reason I can't quite say it like I'm supposed to. So you know who I'm talking about. Basically, how I view this chapter is, you know, now that we know what the norm is in K-pop, how does Bang and his company, Big Hit, how did they, from its earliest days, differ from that norm? And what was Bang reacting to? You got to know what that is in order to understand where he's coming from and why he did what he did. So I got to read the first paragraph quoted from this chapter, because I think the author just has a way with words, and I really appreciate this. So here's the quote. The members of BTS have also started as trainees and considered the head of their agency their mentor, boss, and in some ways their father figure. But what then makes them different from other K-pop stars? This is where Bang Sai-hyuk, nicknamed Hitman Bang, comes in. So do you notice what the author's doing there? She's looking backwards and forwards. You know, there are some things that are, in BTS that are very traditional. No different than other K-pop groups. And yet, there are a lot of differences too. And this chapter focuses on their differences. In the third paragraph of this chapter, we have talk about Bang starting as a producer under the CEO of JYP Entertainment, Park Jin-young, who was behind the success of groups like G period, O period, D period, Rain, who we've talked about, Wonder Girls, etc. Famous K-pop acts, all of them. Well, Bang, before long, earned the nickname Hitman because he had produced and written, produced slash written, a number of hit songs, especially with his work with G period, O period, D period. Those are all lowercase letters, by the way. And so this was one of the best-selling, most popular boy bands at one time, early 2000s. And Bang would say in some setting, I don't have it in front of me here, but it's a quote referring to Park, the CEO of JYP, as someone who taught me everything about producing from A to Z. So he gives a lot of credit to Park. In 2005, Bang begins his own company, Big Hit Entertainment. And so with his background right in the middle of one of these big three JYP type groups, Bang knew about both the good and the bad involved with the K-pop industry. So it's the bad that he didn't appreciate that kind of leads him to make such radical changes when it came to Big Hit. The author describes him as feeling angry and having some rage against things like the mediocrity and unfairness in society, some things he's responding to here, some of his motivating factors. There's a lot of content in this chapter pertaining to Bang's 2019 commencement address to the graduates of Seoul National University, where he went to school himself. And there's a lot of content quoted here from that commencement address. And I just want to say, this was from 2019, so this was 6 years after BTS's debut, near the height of their popularity. And so one could easily understand why Bang could come out at this point, especially. He's no longer the struggling CEO of a struggling company. They're big by now, but he comes right out, and maybe he's done this before, but he does it in a major way here at this commencement address. And I think, and I'm going to read a few things from this, but save most of it for you to read your on your own if you'd like. I'm sure it's online, although I haven't checked on that. But the author makes it clear that this was a big deal because in South Korea, politeness in public rhetoric is expected and often required for celebrities or personalities. That's a quote. And, you know, your script that you normally rely on will reflect that, that kind of politeness. And erring on the safe side, and not getting controversial, but Bang was very different. And I do believe at this point, 2019, he felt freer to be able to speak his mind. And of course, the cool thing about this is he's speaking his mind about things he's felt for years, going way back before 2013, close to 2005 probably. So maybe he's just kind of kept a lot of this to himself, and he's got this perfect venue, it's a perfect time to share a lot of stuff about things that he's been thinking about for quite some time. And so for the next four paragraphs, there are quotes and talk about this commencement address. I don't want to read too much of this, but I want to read these first two lines shared here. This is a quote from Bang at this commencement. There are so many compromises in this world. Many are complacent about change, even when there are better ways to do things, for many reasons, from not wanting to stick out, not wanting to cause trouble, or perhaps because it was always done this way. So this is his way of saying he was sick and tired of that. And he wasn't going to let any of those excuses, those traditional excuses, to keep him from doing what he really wanted to do and what he felt was right, what he felt was best. Two paragraphs worth, full paragraphs worth of quotes. But then she starts paraphrasing more on the next page, page 43, about the rest of his commencement address. She writes, he spoke openly about the lack of integrity of K-pop idol culture, which many of his colleagues would probably omit from their interviews or speeches, but he was being very open about it. And it's all this anger that he's had inside him for quite some time by this point that he made it his goal to fight against that type of mindset and model, seeking to create a company, and this is a quote, that spreads good influence in the society and especially gives positive influence to our customers who are young people, helping them create their own world view. And, of course, this provides the backdrop for his idea of a band that would later become or eventually become known as BTS. I love the way the author puts it. So instead of grooming idols, this is a quote, instead of grooming idols that seem like puppets following the agency's every order, he wanted to find a balance between toughness and sincerity. And end quote. All the quote does go on. There's a reference here to Bulletproof Boy Scouts. Talk about Bang. I love this. He wanted to create an approachable group. This is a quote by the author. That could fill two roles. And I love this because this sums up what I appreciate about the group so much and what I think countless people do. He wanted this group to be both a friend and a hero to youth. Just think about that for a second and how hard it is to do that and how different that would have been from maybe traditional K-pop at that time. A friend and a hero. You can't be a friend unless you get down on their level. You can't be a friend unless you keep it real, unless you keep it authentic, unless you allow your fans to see you as a real, normal human being with all the struggles. And that's coming up here. The author does talk about that more. And there's a cool quote in here by a professor at UCLA, Suk Yong Kim. The quote includes this sentence, many fans in Korea are discontent with labeling BTS as K-pop acts because they think they are more or beyond K-pop, which I think is a cool observation. I'm sure there are some who feel that way. They'll call BTS K-pop, they might say, because they're so different. And they're above all of that. I definitely think there's some truth in that, at least with many fans. My favorite part of both chapters is the next paragraph. And I don't have the source in front of me, so I apologize for that. But there is a source that's quoted here, or footnoted here. A lot of footnotes in this chapter, which is one in this book, which is one thing I appreciate about that. You know, some books will mention some things, but barely mention where the source, what the source is. or just assume you know, or assume you don't care. This author assumes you care and has a lot of footnotes. So here, I'm going to read this paragraph word for word with apologies to the author. This is something the author is quoting. I recently came across a company document from 2012, the year before BTS debuted, in which we were debating what kind of idol group to create. It said, what kind of hero is the youth of today looking for? Not someone who dogmatically preaches from above. Rather, it seems like they need a hero who can lend them a shoulder to lean on, even without speaking a single word. End quote. And I just love that. That speaks volumes about what I have appreciated about BTS. And I'm not even in the target audience anymore of BTS, being a young person and in my teens or 20s. But it's easy to see how that target audience would easily be able to relate to BTS in this way and feel like, yeah, this is a group who is on my level, who's lending me a shoulder to lean on. And I just love that. That is one of the big, big things that allows BTS to stand out, in my opinion. And I appreciate the author mentioning that. And it's neat to get a glimpse of that early document that's out there somewhere. The next paragraph talks about how Bang resisted the tendency to micromanage the band's image, BTS. He gave them, this is a quote, he gave them freedom to write their own songs and ultimately the autonomy to have a say in everything, costumes, choreography, music videos, performances. So he gave them a lot of freedom, in other words, and aren't we glad? A lot of this goes back to him. You can't just look at BTS and think, man, aren't we glad they did this, they did that? It all starts with a man named Bang and how he bucked the system that had been in place for many, many years. And so let's not forget about him in all of this. I know I tend to do that. Because he's kind of behind the scenes. I don't see his face a lot. I don't hear his quotes a lot compared, obviously, to BTS's face, in quotes. Last page of this chapter talks about the human side of BTS that comes out in everything that they do. They are portrayed and are allowed to portray themselves, thanks to Bang, as being vulnerable, unsure, and unpretentious. That's a quote. Continuing a quote. They make mistakes and learn from them. They, just like many other people their age, have worries about the future, insecurities about themselves, and are still grappling with finding their place in the world. And obviously Bang encourages that and did from day one, and how different that is from other groups, at least in the past. Maybe that's changing now. I'm sure it is. But this is one of the big differences. This is one thing one big difference that I see in BTS compared to not just K-pop groups and groups before them, but just like groups the world over, especially big groups, groups that you would think would want to protect a certain image, maybe to protect their popularity, but they recognize the fact that they've become this popular and they have this special relationship with fans like ARMY because of their vulnerability and their unpretentiousness. And obviously, they're going to continue to do that because they know that's what makes them BTS. And there's a paragraph that talks about how Bang just wanted this group to be real and how he didn't restrict them like so many other CEOs might have. with their groups. There's a quote from REM here. When we had our conversation with Mr. Bang when we first started out, he always emphasized that we should sing about our own experiences, our own thoughts, our own feelings. So that has always been at the center of the music that we made. So obviously we can give credit for all that realness. We have Bang allowing it to happen, and then we have the group who made it happen. The last quote from this chapter that I'd like to share is basically it's one full sentence, but it's a paragraph, it looks like. It sums up a lot of what we've already been talking about. Liberating BTS from the constricting norms of K-pop culture is only part of his, that's Bang's, bigger plan. This is a quote. I feel happy when I can be part of changing paradigms of the music industry, help develop it, and take part in improving the quality of life of the professionals in this industry. End quote. That's the end of Bang's quote and the author's quote. I love the bigger picture that quote provides. You know, Bang's influence is far-reaching. And who would have thought early on in those struggling first years that it would have ever been this way? But aren't we glad that it is? And Bang is, he recognizes that and is just saying, I think in a very humble way, I'm just glad I could have a part in that. That it's not just him and his own group and groups that have benefited, but of course, many other groups outside of his company have benefited as well. That is all I have for the episode and the look at this book this week. Again, the title of the book is The Unofficial BTS Bible by Diane Pineda Kim. And I would very much encourage you to check this book out. Pick up your own copy. You can do so easily through places like Amazon, from what I can tell. I always want authors to know that I'm on their side. I'm trying to support them. I'm trying to get more of their books sold. I'm trying to get more books on BTS sold, period, because I think all the focus seems to be on getting more albums sold, getting more streams added up, more tweets, more everything like that, but not so much talk about books on BTS. And I want authors of books about BTS to hear from people like us that we appreciate what they're doing, and we want more of it to come out sooner than later. If you appreciate this podcast in any way, shape, or form, let me know about that. Send me an email. Obviously, subscribe to things like the podcast platform like Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Send me a note saying how much you appreciate the podcast. That's going to keep me going for months and maybe years to come. You can email me at btsbythebook@gmail.com. That's btsbythebook@gmail.com. I'm a huge fan of what one group is doing book-related in the world. It's called Books for Africa. I have no direct ties with Books for Africa in any way, shape, or form. I just appreciate what they're doing, support them in everything they do. They're trying to end the book famine in Africa and have been doing for several decades, and they're such a big help. And I truly believe that a group like BTS, with their interest in helping the little people, they would also be a group that would support a group like this, or would support people who support groups like this. And obviously, it's book related too, so that's why I'm a huge fan. You can find them online at booksforafrica.org. And ask me any questions, make comments, good or bad. I'm open to both. And recommend books I haven't talked about yet. As long as they're in English, I want to know about them. As long as they're above 100 pages, I want to know about them too. Because I like to be aware of everything, if at all possible. Again, that's btsbythebook@gmail.com. You'll also find me, BTS by the Book, on Facebook. So you can follow me there. Thank you so much. Look forward to our next visit where we look at one other fairly new book with a chapter or I believe it's two, from yet another book we haven't talked about yet. Please look forward to that next time. That's all for now. The BTS Bookworm says goodbye. Until next time.